like a base, really take us to 1 Peter 5 and a couple of verses there in order to raise a subject or a topic that I'd like to focus our attention on tonight. I think it has appropriateness as we approach Thanksgiving, but also the thing that sort of triggered it in my mind is last week or two or so just kept coming back to was the whole series on holiness, really from the standpoint of our pursuit of holiness, and one aspect of it, I think, is necessarily tied to this concept at all. So I'm going to work to try and sort of tie those two kinds of things together, our gratitude toward God flowing out of this, but also our receptivity and carefulness about the pursuit of holiness as well. Look at 1 Peter chapter 5, and then I'd like to read verses 5 through 7. But particularly focus on the second half of verse 5. You younger men, likewise, be subject to your elders. And then here comes the part that introduces this element of the thought. And all of you, clothe yourselves with humility toward one another, for God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you at the proper time, casting all your anxiety on him, because he cares for you. You can see in verse 5 the use of the word humility, then in verse 6, humble yourselves. In fact, verse 5, it's clothe yourselves with humility. Then verse 7 or 6 says humble yourselves. And I draw that to our attention because it really is stated in a way that makes it a responsibility or an obligation, a command. And it seems to me that often we tend to equate humility with something of a disposition or an attitude that parks it a little bit out into the feeling zone that has a hard time being applied in a command way. I mean, if I could state it this way, I mean, we tend to think of pride as sort of just a mental disposition, and humility is a mental disposition. You think too much about yourself or too little about yourself. And it's really hard to change that because you just have a way of thinking about things. But biblically, it's actually a little bit different flavor to it. That's why, for instance, you can have a statement like, humble yourselves through fasting. That is, it isn't change the way you're thinking as much as it is put yourself in a different position. I mean, have you ever thought of that? Maybe I'm just expressing the weirdness of my own mind when I do it. But, you know, when somebody says, I'd like to humbly ask you to do something, don't you immediately sort of think, well, if you're telling me it's humbly, then maybe it's not so humble. But the point of it would illustrate mine, that is, to humbly ask somebody isn't my mental state right now has a pretty humble view of myself as I ask you. It's actually the method or the way in which you approach somebody. That is, I'm coming to you and I'm asking you. I'm not demanding of you. I'm not coming and saying, hey, here's my right. Give it to me. We're coming to whoever we're coming to and saying, listen, I'd really like to ask you to do this for me because I need you to do it. That's what makes it humble. We're actually coming in a way that is acknowledging our dependence on the person. What we need to do, I think, is realize that it's not just an error or an attitude, although it can come across. I mean, there can be a proud and haughty look, Proverbs, for instance, talks about. So a person can give off the impression that they think they're better than everybody else. But some people have mastered giving the impression that they're humble in a way that just is intended to draw attention to themselves too. So it's not just how you look, it's really whether or not you put yourself in a lowly position. And that's what this text is emphasizing. Look at verse 7. He says, clothe yourselves with humility toward one another. That is the way in which you relate to other people around you is you put yourself in a position of the lesser, not the greater. Okay, this, you put yourself below somebody. You, to use the language of Romans, you in honor prefer them ahead of yourselves. It's you know, when you line up to get the benefits, you let that person take the spot in front of you and you go behind them. That would be humbling yourself. It wouldn't be taking the spot up here, but taking it meekly. You know, acting like, well, I'm not going to flaunt the fact that I'm in front of you. I'm going to be pretty chilled out about the fact that I'm in front of you, but I'm staying in front of you. See, that's not what humility is. It isn't this affected kind of air. It actually is a commitment to seek something for other people, to put ourselves in a lower position, to recognize in fact, our lowly position in that regard. And that's why we can prefer others ahead of ourselves. We can act in humble ways. It doesn't mean that we act with an air of meekness. It means that we actually act as if other people deserve things and we're not going to try and claim them for ourselves. We're going to accept a position with regard to our own lowliness. And that is rooted in, look at verse 6, the way we stand in relationship to God. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God that he may exalt you at the proper time. And here again, I think you can see in the contrast, right? Humble yourselves, and what's the contrast to that? So you can be filled with pride? No, it's humble yourselves, that is, lower yourself so that he will exalt you. So there's a pretty consistent biblical theme about humility that really has to do with our position. That is, we take a lower position, and the way in which ultimately to have God exalt us is for us to choose the lower position. I mean, Jesus illustrates in the Gospels about going into a banquet where the seats are set up in positions of honor. And if you had the one closer to the people that are important, you were accorded a certain honor. And Jesus said, when you go to a banquet, don't choose the position of honor, choose the lower position. And then somebody might come to you and say, no, you shouldn't be there, come up here. And he was trying to just give a practical illustration of what it means to not exalt yourself and be exalted. And the consistent pattern is that we are not out to exalt ourselves, but rather to demonstrate that we recognize, in the way that King James used to say it, with lowliness of mind, we prefer others ahead of ourselves. Now that, in verse 6, clearly is rooted about our relationship to God. In the past, when I did a mini-series on humility, and I tried to lay out there that really the issue is our proper view of ourself in relationship to God. That's where ultimate humility flows from. And I simply tried to break it down in three kinds of categories, in which we recognize God's position as sovereign and therefore the right to rule over everything. We recognize God's purity and holiness, that is, he's completely without sin. And we recognize his unlimited power, that he is almighty. And we see ourselves in relationship to him in those three areas. That is, he is sovereign, we're not, so we submit to him. He's absolutely pure and sinless. We are anything but that. We're sinful and wicked, and so we're a sin-acknowledging kind of people. And that's an expression of our humility, our lowliness of mind. And that God has the power to accomplish whatever he plans and intends, and you and I do not. It's not resident in us. We have no inherent power. It is in God that we live and move and have our existence. It is that we you got up out of bed this morning wasn't because you have some inherent power or ability. It is that God gave it to you. Whatever you've accomplished in life, whatever gifts you have, whether those are physical capabilities to make and create things, or mental capabilities to organize and explain them, or skills to accomplish things, every one of those have come to you from God. 1 Corinthians 4:7 says, "What do you have that you did not receive? And if you received it, why do you boast as if you did not?" So the point is to say, God is the source of all those things. You're not the source of them. So you should see yourself in relationship to God. He's sovereign and holy and almighty. And we are not sovereign. We're the creature, not the creator. We are sinners and therefore plagued with the frailty of our sinfulness. And we are limited in our abilities. And so if we see ourselves in that way, then we'll consistently be putting ourselves in the right position. Because here's what happens when we don't. When we ignore God's sovereign claim over us, we begin to act like we're the king. We start to try to control our life. We start to act as if we have the right to rule it. And when we're doing that, that's the opposite of humbling ourselves, putting ourselves in the position that says, no, you alone are God, and you have the right to make the calls on my life. When we don't see our wickedness the way we ought, then we have a tendency to be looking at the world with a self-justifying perspective. What I want, I am right to want, even if people are in my way, and me getting what I want is causing problems, I'm still right. And we tend not to see the fact that the lack of being motivated by love for God and love for those who are made in the image of God is, in fact, evidence of our sinfulness. And the minute I begin to treat obstacles to my own agenda in sinful ways, it is because I am not humbling myself. I'm exalting myself. You are standing between me and what I want. And my want is the Lord of my life. That's exalting me rather than humbling me. Whenever I choose to take to my shoulders the burden of carrying everything forward, then I'm actually not humbling myself under the mighty hand of God. That's what this text is talking about. Here are people that were in pressure and persecution, and in the midst of that pressure and persecution, they were stiffening up. They're gonna make their way through it. And the net result was that they were full of anxiety, verse 7. They were taking to themselves responsibilities that only God can fulfill. I mean, to touch to what I said this morning, I mean, there's not a person in this room that can guarantee you and your family will be alive come Tuesday. Some of you are potentially wired to spend between now and next Tuesday burdened down with anxieties about it. Because you have to control everything so that nothing can go wrong. At that point, you have an enormously inflated view of your capabilities. Because only pride could get you to think that you can do anything about stuff that you don't even know is on the horizon. You can't. Only God knows what's going to happen tomorrow. And only God has the power to do ultimately what needs to be done tomorrow. You cannot. So if you carry that burden, you'll be full of anxiety, or when things don't go the way you want, you'll be full of anger. Because certainly something went wrong that shouldn't have gone wrong, and you're ticked off about it. You're not humbling yourself under the mighty hand of God. So genuine humility, if it shows up in our lives, will mean that we gladly give God the credit that He alone deserves for what we are and do. I mean, we gladly give Him the credit. I mean, this week we're approaching opportunity to commemorate or celebrate Thanksgiving. And the whole point of that is supposed to be that we're pausing to acknowledge the blessings and gifts of God. But too often what we are doing when we're not having that little, like, you know, overwhelming gorging of ourselves with food and celebration, is we're looking at the works of our hands and going, wow, look at all that I've accomplished. Look at what I've done. I mean, it's where I want and how I like it now. I've achieved these things. And at that point, then we're actually taking ourselves up in the notches rather than lowering ourselves in the position that says, Lord, there is nothing good that I have which has not come from Your hand. And nothing of what I have do I actually deserve. It's grace. I mean, it can become cliche-ish, but the fact is that every one of us in this room deserve nothing better than hell. I mean, I have committed sins which put Jesus Christ on the cross. And He bore there an eternal punishment at the cross for what I did, for what you did. If I got what I deserved, I would have gotten what He experienced on the cross. That I get anything other than that is grace. And that's true for those who aren't saved, because the Bible talks about His grace even given commonly. I mean, how many times have we sinned against the grace of God? But think about how many times, even in this day, God gave some athlete some ability that He's turned into millions of dollars, and He walked around today telling everybody how great He is. He took the gift of God and turned it into an idol for Himself. But that's the sin we all have, is that we don't gladly, quickly, deliberately give God the credit that He alone deserves for what we are and what we do. That we deserve punishment. We have, even the best of us in trying to do what we know we ought to do. Okay, the best parent in this room is not capable of producing a sanctified child. Okay, so if your child happens to be growing in grace, realize it's grace. The best person in this room is an utter and complete failure apart from the grace of God. So give God the praise for it. Give God the glory, because He has done these things. In verse 6 and 7 says that we should joyfully submit to God's sovereign control over all things. If we really are putting ourselves in the position of humility, humbling ourselves under the mighty hand of God, then we joyfully submit to His control. It may not, and I want to say this carefully, but it may not be that we like what He's doing, okay, because like is a sort of elusive word, but there's a difference between thinking this is what we'd like to do as a recreational pursuit. That's what I mean by like. I mean, if I had my choice, here's what I'd like to do, it wouldn't be this. There's a difference between that kind of a thing and saying, you know what, this is God's assignment for me today. God thinks that this is the thing that I need. And so I'm gladly going to submit to Him because He knows better than me. I mean, he actually knows what I need. I think I don't need this. God obviously thinks I do. So I submit to him. Because if I don't submit to him, I'm rising up to say, wait a minute, God, can we have a conversation here? Like he's our peer? And we could give God counsel about what ought to happen in our lives? Lord, do you realize you may be missing something? Hey, let me explain something to you, because I'm sure if you understood this, you wouldn't be doing what you're doing. I mean, obviously, when I couch it like that, the incredible arrogance of it just oozes out. I mean, who would think to be God's counselor? Well, you know who would be? You would be. I would be. Because there's lots of times we think we know better than God. And it's precisely at those times that we are filled with pride rather than being humble. Rather than saying, Lord, I know there's only one who knows everything, and I'm not him, so I'm going to put myself in the position of submission to you. And if we really are manifesting humility, then we will embrace our roles as God's servants for his glory. That's what verse 5 is talking about, that we will act with humility toward one another. We will recognize that God brings people into our lives so that we might serve God by serving them. Okay, we will realize that Jesus taught that the way up is down. And what he means by that, he's not talking about, again, some kind of artificial, like, you know, oozing spirit of humility. It is the kind of humility that he manifested. There were dirty feet. He went and grabbed a basin and a towel and washed them. There were some blind guys by the side of the road that were annoying everybody else. Everyone else was telling them to shut up. And Jesus went over and said, what do you want me to do for you? See, that was him, and why he could stand up and say, I am humble. I mean, he says that in Matthew 11. I mean, I am humble. And what he's saying there is that I've put myself in the position of servant. That's what Matthew 20 comes along and says. He's not talking about some error. He's talking about the hard reality of putting other people ahead of yourself. And if we can't do that, if we can't do that willingly and deliberately, then we think we're higher on the ladder than some people. I mean, we think, you know what? Doing that is below me. And so I shouldn't have to do that. And there's the evidence that we're not where we ought to be. Because if Jesus could wash the feet of his disciples, certainly you and I can serve one another. I mean, certainly we are not better than the master, are we? I mean, we can't think that the task is below us, can we? I mean, is there anybody higher on the pay grade than Jesus? Yet he took the lowest of jobs in order to serve. And we'll look around at people who have needs and think, that's below my pay grade. See, at that point, we're evidencing that we're not humble at all. We're proud. And here's the truth of it. At the end of verse 6 or 5, why this should be so important to us. God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. I mean, God's grace is available to those who know they need it. And this is the issue. The higher we have ourselves on that ladder, the less we realize how much we need his grace. If I think I'm a semi-sovereign, then I don't think I need his grace until my life gets out of control. I can pretty much handle it till the wheels start to pop off. So most of life, I'm pretty much comfortable doing it my way, living my control center. It's not until I get into trouble that I go, oops, God must be in control. I need grace. All the time before that, I'm running with a pride that thinks that I can make it on my own. I can, in fact, do it by myself. When I walk through life without a recognition that I am a sinner and sin comes out of me quite easily, then I don't look at the fact that I need His grace day by day to just walk spiritually. I tend to think following Christ just comes naturally because, you know, I've been a Christian for a long time and I know a lot of Bible and I go to church regularly, so I'm okay. I can just keep on rolling until something big happens, which means I haven't recognized my need for His grace. When I think that I can handle most of life in my own strength, then I clearly am not depending on His grace to handle it. Okay, we need to recognize that. The grace that God has for us is when we put ourselves in a position of recognizing our dependence on Him. So here's actually where I started thinking about this humility issue, because you know I spent several weeks talking about holiness, and I started thinking to myself, you know, practically, humility is so essential to that because of what I was just saying. And let me just give three specific kinds of examples where our pursuit of holiness might be damaged by our lack of humility. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 12 would say that if we are overconfident about our spiritual strength, we're in trouble. Let him who thinks he stand take heed, lest he fall. You know, it just seems to me that we are so susceptible to that danger, just like the Corinthians, that we don't see ourselves as walking on slippery ground. We think we pretty much have got the footing safe. Unless all of a sudden something breaks out. But for the most part, we don't think we're at war. We don't think that we have an adversary. We're not suspicious of the flesh like we ought to be. We're not sober about the nature of sin itself, that it is so deceitful. Now, I think we should be thoroughly confident in the Spirit of God. But we shouldn't be so confident about ourselves. We should not think that we can handle any sin. We should not think that we are not susceptible to the greatest kinds of failures. You know, I actually quit because it was a little discouraging. But as I was thinking about this message, I just started jotting, like, you know, when you do the little tally lines, you know, 4, 4, 5 across, boom, boom, boom. I started jotting down the people that I had prepared for ministry with who had sinned themselves out of ministry. And now, obviously, I graduated from college in 83, so it's been 27 years since I graduated from college. It's almost 30 years since I started preparing for ministry because I was a Bible major, Greek minor, college, and seminary. So you got a long period of time, a lot of different people. But you know what, when you start to get to the second and third collection of tally marks, that's pretty discouraging. Because the reality is, it's probably close to about one every 2 years. Guys who studied to preach and teach the Word of God. Okay, and here's what the Scriptures say. Let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. So I'll say that very specifically to you guys studying for ministry. But you know what? I didn't even start making the tally of believers that I know who have had enormous sin problems. Because it doesn't probably cost you your job. So it's a little less observable. It'll cost some of us our job. And it ought to. Okay? It ought to. But the fact is that the devil gets a lot more wins than we give him credit to. In some ways, we like to cocoon ourselves in a little bubble and act like that only happens somewhere else. It certainly couldn't happen among us and to us. And that kind of lack of caution about spiritual danger is an evidence of pride that really makes us susceptible to very serious, dangerous falls. Another way, I think, is our unresponsiveness at times to exhortation. Hebrews 3, a text I'll appeal to regularly, tells us that God put us in the midst of an assembly so that others could exhort and encourage us because of the deceitfulness of sin. And here's the thing I would say to all of us is that we must do war against our tendency not to be responsive to exhortation from other people. I mean, there is something woven into us by virtue of pride that wants to try to deflect away when people bring something to our attention that's not right. Okay, a lot of people, we start with defense. The very first thing in our mind and heart is to try to give a reason for why what they're saying isn't the case. And if our first response to every rebuke that comes to us is to offer a reason, you should at least stop and ask yourself, is it possible that I give reasons because I'm really trying to avoid responsibility? That is, I want to explain to somebody why what happened, because if they understand why it happened, they won't think about me the way they're thinking. Which means what we've really done is shifted from the thing that needs to be addressed to ourselves. We're trying to protect ourselves because we're worried about how we look or how someone might think about us. Rather than actually saying, you know what, if there's a problem here, I need to hear it and know it so I can deal with it. We need to recognize that blame shifting is woven into our depravity. I mean, it goes right back to the garden. Okay? That's the first thing that Adam and Eve did. Right? The woman that you gave me, the serpent that you made. And if the serpent could have said something, you know, it's Lucifer who... I mean, everybody wants to pass the buck. Everybody wants to find somebody else responsible for the reasons and the causes, the nature of it. And when we blame shift, it is to minimize our accountability. Now, I'm not saying that every time somebody rebukes you about something that they're right. But here what might be good for us. Start with the premise they might be right. Because basically, we're woven naturally to start with the premise they can't be right. And I would suggest to you that we would be better off to start with the premise, let's hear what they have to say. They might be right. They might actually, you know, they might come to you with this massive complaint, and there might only just be this little part of it that's right, but that's exactly the part that God wants you to hear. And what happens too often is they come to you and we're looking for the thing that they're wrong about. Well, they said this happened on Tuesday. It didn't happen on Tuesday. As if that matters. It's not when it happened. Did it happen? Or if they say, you know, you've done this 10 times and you've actually only done it 9, so it's okay. I mean, we're so inclined to free ourselves from the responsibility of it, and we have to ask ourselves why. I would come back to here. we somehow think that the sinlessness of God is actually ours. We've got too high a view of ourselves. The fact is, we really shouldn't be surprised when somebody shows us that we've done something wrong. We probably should be surprised that we don't have more shown to us. Because newsflash, you've sinned a lot more today than you realize it. Okay, you've sinned a lot this last week. Okay, you had thoughts and affections and actions that were not to the standard of God's holy character. I mean, if we really were having exposed to us as much as we ought to how sinful we are, we'd be crushed, I hope, under the weight of it. Because we ought to be. I mean, if we're not regularly feeling the weight of our sinfulness, then we're too high on the ladder already. Now, I don't know about you, but there's times when I just sit there and think, what an idiot about me. I mean, I've been saved since I was 8 years old, so that was 41 years ago. I've got a bachelor's degree in Bible. I've got a master of divinity, a master of theology, a doctor of ministry. I've been preaching God's word for almost 30 years. And I still do this kind of stupid stuff. I mean, if I have to have somebody point it out to me, that should be a cause for humility in itself. Because if I can't see it, something's wrong. So why should I begrudge somebody trying to help me? Even if they might do it stupidly. Because sometimes people do. You know, I was told a long time ago, I read it somewhere, that there was a Chinese proverb, don't use a hatchet to remove a fly from your friend's forehead. And I was teaching the Chinese guys one time, and I asked them about their proverbs. They had never heard of it. So, shows you not to trust fortune cookies, apparently, or something like that. Okay, but the point is true. Some people take the fly off with a hatchet. Okay, they don't try to say, hey, can I carefully extract from you something that is not good? They just plow into you. But you know what? If it's not good, then you want it out, right? I mean, if it's harmful to your testimony, harmful to your spiritual life, harmful to other people, don't you want it out? So they used a hatchet, metaphorically. It'd be better if they didn't. But you know what? It'll heal. Be thankful that something worse has been removed from your life. And if we can't handle it, it's because of our pride. We don't have the humility that we need. And I think 1 John 1 would say, an unwillingness to confess our sins is the evidence of pride in our life. We need to recognize the incredible power for self-justification, self-defense, even in the confession of our sin. Okay, we have to be sin-confessing people. If we're not, then we're confusing ourselves with God. And it's an evidence of our pride. I mean, we fail because we're sinners. We're redeemed sinners. We're regenerate sinners if we know Christ. And so God's doing all kinds of good things. And we ought to hear that. And I certainly, some of you are really melancholy people. And so if you want to talk to me afterward, because you're like really depressed after this message, okay, I'd love to talk to you, because you need to hear the side that God's doing gracious things in your life. The fact that you're not in hell yet is the greatest example of it, but also that He is, in fact, at work in every believer. Who you began a good work will continue it until the day of Christ. So, you know, when I look at one side of it and I think, my, there is so much more that God needs to do in my life. But then I look at that list and I think, Lord, thank you so much. Because the thing that distinguishes me from them is you. Thank you. And help me to realize that if I ever become comfortable with my sin, I will be in the same boat as they are. So help me to hate my sin enough to name it and own it. To say, this is what Jesus died for. And it should not be in my life. See, and if we can't do that, if we want to just like sort of sweep it under something and act like it's not there, then it doesn't get dealt with. It's not solved. And our pride just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. I mean, it's been, to me, some of the most amazing things to see people who are so wrapped up in sin while pointing their finger at other people. It's like, how does that happen? I mean, seriously. How is someone engaged in open, clear rebellion against the will of God ever have the audacity to be criticizing some other believer about some small thing in their life? It's just like, how does that happen? Well, it's because we don't see it that way. Because we've not cultivated a heart to be sin confessors. We're sin minimizers. We look at it like Jesus confronted the people of His day. We see what's in the other person, but we don't see what's sticking out of our eye. And it inevitably will produce enormous, disastrous consequences in our lives. So as we move this week to a time of thanksgiving, which ought to be always in our heart, but when we take a formal time to say, Lord, thank you for what you've done, let's make certain that that thanksgiving is genuine, because it's grounded in a very deliberate commitment of our heart to say, Lord, you alone are sovereign. I'm your servant. You alone are perfect in holiness. I'm a sinner. You alone are omnipotent. I do not have that kind of power. I depend on you. Because when we do that, then we will gladly submit to His will. We'll gratefully acknowledge all that He has done for us and in us. And we'll see others as recipients of God's grace and an opportunity for us to serve them rather than to be served by them. And I believe we will be, in a very effective way, building a perimeter around our heart to guard it against the attacks of sin. Because we'll recognize our weakness. We will recognize the need we have for people to point out the blind spots in our life. We'll recognize that we can never kid God, so we should not deceive ourselves about our own sin. Let's call it what it is. Let's just say about it what God says about it, so that we can confess it, and He's faithful and just to forgive us. Let's bow together in prayer.